to begin.
Peter, you said it's somewhere in West LA. That yeah. Quentin Tarantino kind of just, I think I heard that he bought it or something, right?
Yeah, it used to be an old theater called the Beverly Theater. Mm-hmm. So now it's called the New Bev. So he owns it now. And like the whole like novelty of it is like, oh, they're going to have movies play on film there. Mm-hmm. So like you're going to get new movies. Like he'll see if he can get a film print.
Yeah.
But like sometimes he'll do digital. But on the daily, they bring old movies, like the actual film reels. Mm-hmm. From those, and they'll play it on film there, and they'll usually pair them with like vintage previews, which is kind of cool.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so you're seeing all these previews of movies and you're like, I've never seen these kind of like commercials. Yeah. Or like, you know, and old cartoons, so he'll have like all this stuff playing, and it's pretty fun. They do it like every day, and they'll have midnight movies too, so mm-hmm. It's really cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I think they should do like the outdoor theater. They put like a big like balloon outside somewhere on a rooftop, and you can like watch old school movies too.
Yeah.
I don't know if those are film. I doubt those are film, but.
Oh, yeah. Those have to be digital for sure.
Digital, right?
Yeah. Okay. It's just like film is so expensive, and like it's also like really flammable. It's very hard to like load and all of that. But even to get like film stock and everything for movies mm-hmm. is like really difficult. Like you have to know studios at that point, so he could do that, which is cool. You know,
I'm assuming at that point you have to have a film camera to be filming with, right? Or you
oh,
or
for does those it convert?
Yeah,
I mean, like there's movies that are shot on film and then they convert it to digital. Mm-hmm. But all the movies, like if they have the film stock, like movies up until like the early 2000s and some movies today, you have to shoot it like mm-hmm. film camera with a, I forgot what they call it.
Those big like Mickey case. Mouse ears.
Which,
okay.
I've seen movies do it now, but it's so expensive, so most people don't.
Yeah, one thing I did kind of, just that you mentioned now that people used to use those cameras, I think that movie Everything Everywhere All at Once recently, they started working with some iPhones and stuff. And I was like, dude, that's pretty cool, you know? They're just kind of, I honestly don't know how much their budget was or that stuff, but the fact that they were using very, you know, basic or primitive tools in a sense to capture these things was like, damn, that's pretty badass.
Yeah, they're really cool. The Daniels, they've like, even when they first started doing like short films and music videos, like they were always good at special effects. Mm-hmm. So like, since they know how to do it as well, like it brings down their budget. So like them as a duo, plus knowing how to work with all of that on their own, really just made them like valuable. Mm-hmm. So like, they have like the dumbest, but it's a great short. It's just called The Ball, and it goes down a town, and this ball like changes people's lives, and like they star in it too, but like it starts with the guy like farting, both directors, mm-hmm. one director farting in the other director's face, like bare ass, and then his head gets stuck in there. Like I'm like, this is literally like one of their like bigger first shorts. You can find it on Vimeo. They did Turn Down for What, the mm-hmm. music video.
Oh, so. Shit, what?
Yeah.
Okay.
So as you can tell, like, they've kind of been, like, always them. Mm-hmm. So.
What the hell? I didn't know that part.
Yeah. Oh. So, yeah, like, they've always, to me, been like, okay, they're going to move with the times. They're going to mm-hmm. always, like, adapt. So it's cool to see iPhones in there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. No, I mean, and you, your background, from what you mentioned earlier, you consider yourself like an independent director or filmmaker, right?
Yeah, definitely independent.
Now, what does that necessarily like mean?
Yeah, I'm just early on in my career. So mm-hmm. like, I don't have like the money or resources to like, I think the biggest thing is like star talent in like marketing mm-hmm. and getting your movie to a theater or like distribution, which means like, can we get like, let's say like an A24 to pick it up and have a theatrical release or something. Mm-hmm. Like that's really hard to do as an indie filmmaker. That's like the goal for everyone. And now like the closest thing you can get is like maybe someone buys your whole movie mm-hmm. and gives you a licensing deal on like a streaming platform.
Okay.
But that isn't really, it's just not as much money and it's not as much like exposure, you know, if it gets lost in there. So since I'm like, early on in my career, I would say like I'm independent. I've only done two shorts that have like bigger names behind it, like companies. Like mm-hmm. I had HBO, my previous one, and my current one's McDonald's. Like that's pretty good leverage for me, but I need to make a feature film. And like I am pitching right now to like bigger production companies, mm-hmm. but until like that fully gets greenlit, until we make that, until that goes into festivals, until that gets picked up by a distribution company, then I would be like more on the same level with like the Daniels or something, right? Mm-hmm. And even then, they're kind of considered like auteur filmmakers, because there's so many movies you watch, you don't know who the director is, right?
Yeah.
Let's say a Tarantino, a Scorsese, they're all auteurs. And that's kind of even harder to get to.
Like where people recognize that this is your film without even knowing, yeah. I guess, in a sense, right? Because of the style, I'm assuming, or?
Yeah, like you're not a director for hire. Like you're going to like have a whole look and do your own thing. So I'm really on, that's always the dream, you know, but yeah, so I'm independent, moving up there. Poor. That's another word for poor. Yeah.
Hey, no, I mean, that's the, I think that's sometimes what's needed though, right? Not the poor part, but like just the drive to reach that destination, right? That's the part that motivates us, and other people see you and you're like, hell yeah, you know, keep going, Jasmine. Or like, I want to be where she's at, you know, because I'm sure if you look back a few years ago, and do you see like what you've gone through now as like big jumps in the amount of time that you've been in this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's funny because like, I like even with HBO, I feel like I made that at like 21, 22. Mm-hmm. And I like really fought to make sure that movie like got to festivals and had like a home, and it did eventually, like, and I got really lucky, and I knew I was being I was lucky, you know. So I just try to like not like let that slide, like just like ride the momentum and keep working. And then COVID happened, which created a gap. Yeah. Unfortunately. But even like last year working on like my Western with McDonald's Kid Ugly, like it feels like it's been forever, but it really has been a big stride, because it has been like a jump in like, oh, instead of like two people in a room at my grandma's house, we had horses on a movie ranch with a bunch of actors, not just two people in a room at my grandma's house. So
damn, that was at your grandma's house? Sorry to
interrupt. Yeah, the letter was. Shit. Yeah.
Oh, crap. Okay, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, now that we talked about it, sorry, but can you give us a little bit of background about the letter?
Oh, yeah. So the letter, it was my first short film I did. I made it like graduating class at my film school. So it was my first time directing, first time writing. I wrote it, directed it, produced it, and edited the film. I'm an indie filmmaker. I do it all because nice. it's much more inexpensive. Yeah, so that movie's about two kids who... their dad goes to the U.S. and he is leaving them in Mexico because he's going to make money. And it's based on my grandpa who went to the U.S. and my mom and her brothers and sisters and my grandma were in Mexico, like waiting for him to send back money and wondering if he was going to come back. So I told the story from the kid's perspective, one thinking he's the best, he's going to come back. The other one being more negative of like, no, you don't know. So it's a coming of age film and seeing how they adapt to finding the truth of like what's going to happen to dad. And like they find a letter to see like, oh, what's his last message to us? So, yeah, it was a family thing. And, like I kind of mixed it around to make it more of like a movie, because real life is kind of boring. My grandpa did not leave my family in Mexico. He came back. but in the movie, he did leave. Spoiler. It was just more interesting, and it made the two characters more closer together. Mm-hmm. And also, I tied in my own like personal story, because like I grew up with a single mom, so I figured like, okay, if I have like an absent father and showing these kids are gonna be okay, I feel like I'm mixing not only my family side, my personal side, and the actual writing, like fiction side, to make this film, you know, its own thing. It's not an autobiography. So that movie did really well. It had, only like four people in it, only two real people talking. It had Xochitl Gomez, who is now in Doctor Strange as, America Chavez. And that was her first, leading role, like big leading role.
Yeah.
And then Justin Vasquez, who was her brother, and he's doing great. He's doing a lot of movies in Austin right now as a filmmaker. So we did the festival circuit. It did really well. Won a lot of awards for directing, actress, and screenplay. And at our last festival, it feels so like movie-like. We got our licensing from HBO. which is really cool. So that was like my first time directing. So that was pretty wild. I was very shocked.
Damn, that's awesome. And to go back to the whole thing that this was filmed at your grandma's house.
Oh, yeah. Damn. Not far from where we're filming. Yeah.
That is really awesome. Like, I mean, you did it on, you know, I mean, you guys decide locations and all that stuff. So that's something that you personally wanted to go with?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, because it was what was more feasible at the time. Because, like, my grandma lives in East LA. So I was like, she has a pretty nice house. It has, like, those old, more vintage-looking, like, arches. Mm-hmm. And they're, like, Spanish style. The bedroom stuff was my room. We just painted it. So it was all at home. And it was... I mean, yeah, it wasn't really on purpose. It was just because we needed the money. Because even getting the money to make it was really hard. Because, like, in film school, like, I went to a really shitty one. I went to this one called the Art Institute. The ones that closed down, the ones that had commercials. Yeah. it's because I didn't know what I wanted to do. I just, like, all right, I'll call that number. But I don't know. I saw the movies that some people made prior and they were just so janky for their thesis film. And I'm like, I know we don't have cinema cameras, but I've volunteered and interned enough during school to know, like, we can get cinema cameras for really cheap, or we can make this look expensive without it being expensive, you know? So I made a lot of effort to make sure, like, all the money went in the right places, you know? And we got really lucky with that movie in a lot of ways. Like, I didn't have the money to make the movie, so I tried taking out a loan because I was just trying to get like 4K to make it. At the time, that was like, oh my God, 4K is like $30,000, you know? But I couldn't get it. I kept getting denied. And then, like, eventually my grandpa even tried like co-signing with me and I got denied again. And he was like, look, we have a little bit of money saved. You can borrow it and pay us back. And I was like, okay. So, like, that was like a big deal to me because, like, I don't get money for my family like that, and we don't have money like that. So I was just shocked that he's gonna be giving me like 4K to make a short for my school. Like, that was insane. So I made sure every single thing, like, we made the most of it. And yeah, like, I mean, even the camera, like, they accidentally rented out our camera when we were picking it up to someone else, and they're like, we're gonna give you a better camera. Like, instead of the 2K one, we're going to give you the 8K one with vintage lenses. I'm like, whoa, that's great. So all of these things associated with the short, I feel like there was just so much luck there. But I think, I don't know, like, when you just approach things with good intentions, sometimes, like, good things come your way. And, like, I worked hard on it. Again, I produced it, so I saw where the money went in and out. The car stuff, like, we rented out a car on an app, like Turo. When I saw we were saving money, I'm like, let's get a fucking Porsche, you know? Like, let's... I was like, let's go to the desert. And then I was like, do I have a friend with an RV? Yay, okay, let's go take the RV out to have a bathroom to go in. A lot of people working for free because they're friends. My friend wanted to be a stunt coordinator, so he did the fight scene and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was a lot to learn, and which is so different from my new one that I did, because that one, Kid Ugly, I had actual producers doing work. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so much better.
That was like basically like a whole team already, right? Like a whole crew?
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, originally the film school one for The Letter was just like film school buddies, parents, their parents helping out, you know? And it really shows. I feel like it's a really good passion project. But yeah, oh my God, I forgot what your question was.
In regards to the Kid Ugly, I mean, at this point it was just like the crew for Kid Ugly. You know what? I forgot what my question was.
I know. But I feel like I was divulging, but I didn't want to cut off the story, you know?
No, but I think it started off with, it filmed at your grandma's house, made it work with what you got, which I think is really cool, because I know a lot of creatives who just work sometimes with the bare minimum and they make cool shit, you know? And sometimes it means like you don't have to have $1,000 studio or something to be like, hey, I can make something cool, something that can really resonate with the human fucking, you know, emotional responses, and just get it done.
Yeah. Oh my God. Like, I've seen people like with budgets like 30K for a short, and that stuff they raise, which, like, even me, like, I don't feel comfortable sometimes like asking for money, like doing like a GoFundMe to me stresses me out. Like, and then like it doesn't look like 30K, you know? So like, if you have 4K and you can make it look really good, like, it just depends if you have the right people who are on the project, you know? So yeah, it's just like being smart. I think working smarter, not harder, has always been my motto.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like doing too much work if it's unnecessary.
Yeah, I mean, because, I mean, again, there's different ways. Like, somebody told me once, like, there's a right way to do things and there's a smart way to do things. You know, and sometimes that doesn't, obviously, it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to figure that stuff out. And, you know, it seems like you guys did it. Like, you did it for sure.
Thank you.
And then with Kid Ugly, I mean, I know that was sponsored by, I think, the Dorado, like a Dorado program or something, right?
Yeah.
Spotlight Dorado.
It was sponsored by a program called Spotlight Dorado, which is through McDonald's. So it was, I was their first year, first class. So they picked three filmmakers and they give them $75K to make a short film. So I was like, holy shit. And yeah, I applied to that. I got through all the phases and then I was picked as one of the three. And I submitted with my short film, Kid Ugly, which is a Western. I started this actually as a pilot, but I just submitted the first five pages because that's all they wanted at first. And then when I got through the next phase, I was like, oh shit, I gotta make this into 10 pages. I was like, okay. So I rewrote this script to fit 10 pages. And what it's basically about, it's a Western about an outlaw who runs into one of her biggest fans, and he wants to be her sidekick. So the short is just like introducing their world, a little quirky world in the West, and them meeting each other and teaming up. So that's the short. And then the series is about them like joining a contest, like a bounty contest under their pseudonyms, because she's like, you know, like at least in the story, again, spoiler, she's like a woman who dresses as a man to do crime, which is like based in reality, like that happened a lot in the West. So it was a way to conceal like any crime and blame it on a guy versus like knowing her true identity. And then he has like a little like alter ego named Kid Ugly, which he hides with like a mask. So for the series, they go like enter this bounty competition across America and under their real selves, and then they still commit crime under their like alter egos, essentially. So yeah, it's like a little intro that doesn't take on that whole plot point yet, but I hope that people understand like, oh, this is cool, like, because the vibe, everything's there, like the acting, I love it, the costumes, like the world building, which to me is the hardest part. And I was able to do that with Spotlight, which is really cool. Definitely the budget helped a lot. I never thought I would make this. I thought this like idea was going to be something that just sat in like the back of my closet, whatever, like for years. Cause like, who's going to fund a Western? Like, you're going to have horses. You're going to have all these costumes, have a kid. It's all these things add up to costs. So when I got through this and had the opportunity to make the short version of Kid Ugly, which is now a proof of concept for the series, like, this is like, to me, like a once in a lifetime opportunity. So we made the most out of that budget. And my producers, it was all my team, people I met throughout the years when networking, all Latinos. My producers were Latinas, Miranda Guzman and Miranda Pacheco. And they were amazing. Like, we saved money. Like, we were like, 75K. Like, it's just insane. Like, the other projects all went over budget. Mind you, they're like not that extensive. Ours has a bunch of scenes. Again, we have horses, we have costumes that reflect the time period. We have a child that we have to coordinate between, like, because kids can only be on set for a certain amount of time, and they can only be like working like on camera for like X amount of time, and then they have to do school on set. So the younger the kid is, the less time you have to work with them. So it's really hard.
Oh, so you gotta make sure that you use the time that they're there.
Oh yeah, our schedule, like, we make sure his shots are like, oh, he can only work for 30 minutes and then do school 20 minutes and then go back in for 30. Like, we had to like coordinate all of that to get him in.
Damn,
yeah, and then you have to hire someone, a studio teacher, to school them on set. So it was a lot. And we still went under budget, and I think it looks amazing. It's a great representation of everybody. And yeah, that was the next bigger thing I did, which was Kid Ugly, and it was crazy.
That's pretty cool. I read somewhere that it was inspired again by spaghetti westerns and some anime, right?
Yeah. Nice. I mean, I love spaghetti westerns. Like, my favorite one is Once Upon a Time in the West. Mm-hmm. So, like, I was just, like, pulling from so much music, aside from, like, you know, the Dollar series. Like, obviously, those are great. And pulling from all of, like, all the, like, you know, like, the typical, like, themes from there. Mm-hmm. I basically pulled the lonesome cowboy trope from, like, all, like, you see it in, like, The Good and the Bad with, like,
Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, uh-huh. Like, you see all these, like, characters, like, all the time again. Ones who want revenge, all these other ones. So I took the lonesome, like, cowboy, like, and put that as my lead, who's, like, you know, Bottle Tooth Guapo, that's her name, like, her alter ego name. And I took, like, the shonen, like, underdog. Like, I based it off, like, Naruto. I was like, okay, Aiden, because he watches Naruto. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, Aiden, your character's like Naruto. He just wants to show everyone that he can be the best. He believes in himself. No one else believes in him. And he's going to, mm-hmm. you know, get there. Like, he's going to make it happen. So, which helped because he also watches Naruto.
Yeah,
so
I'm like, oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, perfect. But most of the inspiration was also from, I don't know if you've ever seen JoJo's Bizarre Adventure or read it.
I've seen some of them, yeah.
I fucking love JoJo's. So there's a part 7, which is Steel Ball Run, is a Western. Mm-hmm. So I'm a big fan of that manga. And I think a lot of, I put a lot of Easter eggs actually in the movie from that, which I don't think people would know unless they're like,
they're fans
big
of it.
Fans. Uh-huh. Yeah, I put only some stuff from the anime. Like, I put one thing from the anime mm-hmm. in it. And someone did notice it recently when I played in LA.
Oh, they told you?
Yeah, they came up to me at the end. They were like, Whole Horse Canyon? I'm like, yeah. You're a JoJo fan? Yeah. And she's like, yeah. So, yeah, I'm a big fan. And also, I love Cowboy Bebop. So, mm-hmm. originally, nice. And the short was supposed to have more jazz in it. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, we had such a tight timeline with Spotlight. We were given like less than 3 months to film and complete it, like mm-hmm. edit. So for a composer to do full jazz and like, you know, with their whole like all the musicians to go and like practice.
That'll be like original?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That would be hard. Mm-hmm. Like, and also digital horns and like all of those instruments are hard to duplicate in like on any sort of like, any digital thing, like mm-hmm. it just doesn't sound the same, so like all that wouldn't sound good. So I went for a different type of sound that's a little more like, I don't know how I would explain it, but we went with stock music this time because we ran out of time. Yeah. But it didn't sound bad because we like could change the stems and move it around. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't bad, it was really good. And this is all for like proof of concept, but originally Bebop. So that's where my inspiration was. I was like, okay, Bebop, JoJo, a little bit of Naruto. And I don't know if you've seen Lupin the Third.
No, that one I have not. No.
Okay, I love Lupin. So Lupin was what inspired Cowboy Bebop. And you can see it when you finally watch Lupin. It's really great. It feels like a mix of like kid and adult, you mm-hmm. know? And like, that's like the vibe I was going for. And I'm like, I want something that anyone can see. It's kind of like Toonami-esque. Like it's in the between like Adult Swim and Cartoon Network, you know?
Nice, okay. Yeah.
So that was like my vibe going into Kid Ugly and with the aesthetic and tropes with a lot of spaghetti westerns. So I was really excited to do it. That was like the biggest, to me, passion project. So yeah, it was crazy that we made it.
Damn. Now, I know you mentioned earlier that I guess it's going through, like, it's being viewed or something, so it's not out for the public, per se?
Yeah, so we filmed it, and it released December 7th, 2022, so that we had, like, a screening at the Academy Museum, but it was, like, a private screening. So what we're doing now, what typically when you make a short film, you have to do the festival circuit, so they're typically, like, a year to maybe 2 years of doing film festivals, depending on when you miss deadlines and all that kind of stuff. So a lot of them need, they can't have it be seen publicly online because mm-hmm. they want to have more exclusivity. So they're like, okay, we need this movie to be available to watch. And there, people are going to have a reason to pay for it at our festival. Like they're not going to mm-hmm. like see it online for mm-hmm. free, you know? There was an exception for that, like in the early 2020 days for film festivals, but now it's like they're really strict. Yeah, they're like, no, you need to like exclusivity.
Yeah, I mean, I've only had my share of seeing like a film set per se. Like mentioned earlier, like where I work, it's surrounded by just screenwriters and directors and all these people from just the industry, film industry. And then one of these days, somebody came in, they're like, hey, we want to use this location for a show, for a Hulu show. And we were like, what? And that, you know, the owner signed the contract and they were gonna film for, I think it was Tommy and Pam or something. For
oh, Hulu. Yeah.
Yeah, the yeah. one, Pamela Anderson. And Seth Rogen was in the store and he was just wearing a mullet. And I was like, dude, this is magical. Just how they turned the regular space into a 90s version of it. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, all the moving parts, people screaming at each other or people being happy. Cut, you know, the people getting frustrated. But it's like, at the end of the day, you see the product and you're like, damn, well, this work happened for a few minutes on screen. And it's, I think the store scene was only a few seconds. And I was like, bro, they spent all this time, like 3 days filming in the location for only like 8 seconds of the shot.
Yeah.
I was like, bro.
And who knows? Stuff got cut out. You know? Like, maybe there was more. And then they just like were like, nah, that doesn't work anymore. Take it out.
Man, that's crazy.
It's crazy. I mean, even like recently, I don't know if you went to downtown, but they had like the Joker set up for Joker 2.
No, what? Oh, yeah. They were filming here. That's pretty cool.
They're turning like downtown LA into like New York. So like it was insane. Like it was open. I think because they couldn't really close it down. Mm-hmm. So like you're seeing people put like fake graffiti, which are stickers, like they'll put on the wall and like all the tagging. They put like fire hydrants that are more specific to New York and all like the fake like subway stuff. So it was really funny and weird like seeing those clips. I'm like, this is in LA? Like just like Joaquin Phoenix walking, like, you know?
Yeah. Damn, that's crazy. But earlier you mentioned about world building. Mm-hmm. Like when you're writing a script or when you're putting something together, I'm assuming you, like you mentioned, you have to go further than just the development of the characters, right? Like you have to put them in the environment that makes them exist in there, right? Mm-hmm. Like how do you approach that? Like,
yeah, I mean, it's funny because like there's different ways to tell stories. Some people can have ones that, like genres, I think need more world building because like inherently you need to understand the rules in which like these characters are functioning. Mm-hmm. Like if you're having a horror film, like what kind of horror film is this? You know, like, is this going to be like really scary? Is it like if we're talking about some like It Follows, have you seen It Follows?
It Follows. I think I have. It's like this weird thing that follows you, right?
Like, it's like a STD like villain, so it follows like the next person you have sex with. But that movie,
that's the one.
Yeah, it has a really cool poster. That one sets up such an interesting world building, which I don't even like know if it fully accomplishes, but like it tries to make it seem more surreal, you know? So like if it's gonna be more surreal, then that's something you want to set up, right? Like I guess the more like intense example is like a David Lynch. Like his world building is very clear. Sometimes you're just like, okay, it's a weird world. Like, okay, I get it. Everyone acts this way. Everyone responds to these things in a specific manner where you understand what's happening. And then there's other movies that it doesn't really matter what world they're in, because it's like, oh, like it's more like character based. Like it's just how these two characters interact and like a very specific like plot point, you know? Like I don't know. Like I think there's so many aspects to film, and like we're going back to Kid Ugly. I think that world building was really key because I wanted to blend all those elements. So if I want to show this specific style and this lighthearted way that these people are living in the West, where it's like, well, it's not that big of a deal to them. They kind of just live this life and they're all kind of like a little dumb or something, you know? Mm-hmm. Like I need to clarify that with like all the characters, the side characters as well, you know? And like with the camera movements, like I need to do it with the music, I need to do it with the pacing. So it's something that like is beyond like even just that filming day. That's why like I feel like people don't understand what directing is sometimes. Like they think like, oh, it's just you on set, like telling people where to go, telling actors what to say. It's about having a vision. So like if your vision requires like a world building or more like character base or whatever, you need to do that. So Yeah, it just depends on the director and their style. Because, like, you can be a Kevin Smith. Like, that's not world building. That's just, like... I'm not calling him out. I'm just, like, you know, it's just, like, his are about, like, more of the dialogue, you know?
Yeah,
like,
exactly. So, yeah, because there's not too much happening outside of the world. You just kind of, like... It could be here in front of this door and it can just be chilling and talking, you know?
But, yeah. I mean, I suppose there's always a bit of world building in it. But, like, it, you know, I just think it depends on what you're, like, specifically going for. Mm-hmm.
Now, when you started in filmmaking, was that like your first go to? Like you were like, hey, I'm going to go to film school.
Yeah. I mean, originally I wanted to be an illustrator. That was what I wanted to do when I was smaller. Mm. And I did go to a little bit of college for that. So I liked, you know, anime, like mangas, and I would already do storytelling through different like panels and like drawing out like stories. So I was always into storytelling in that kind of manner. And I also just like movies a lot. Mm-hmm. So like my family, like they just like know so much. Like, yeah, I feel like they can like have a conversation like about anything, like, and movies in particularly really was something like they grew up in the 70s. So they get to see like the blockbusters when they came out. They got to live through the 80s. So they saw when those things came out. So it's part of like ingrained in their like upbringing.
Okay.
So I got to like learn all of that from them, like my aunts and uncles, my mom. So naturally I knew of all these older movies and like just the variations of it. And then with cartoons, it helped me also see like different cultures, variations of it. Like I'm seeing the American, I'm seeing the Japanese, I'm seeing the Mexican side. And I think it's really cool. Cause like, then that leaves, I think, most Americans, right? Like, are kind of raised in that kind of hodgepodge, thing.
Like, you know? Yeah, there's, like, a mixture of influences from all over,
Yeah, so I wanted to do animation, illustration, and then animation. And I went to SMC for a little bit. I was trying to do 2 years and then transfer to CalArts because I was like, okay, the Disney school, CalArts, you know, they, especially with 2D can help me. But when I was going to SMC, I realized with all the prerequisites I was taking, I was like, oh man, I have to do all these 3D classes and I kind of, I'm really dreading it. I wasn't having fun. So I realized, I was like, you know what? Like, if I'm dreading it this much and I'm like, I feel like it's going to ruin like the spark in me. Like, I feel like I should do something else. So, and I also get very antsy if people are like, no, you need to take this class before you can do this. Like, that stresses me out. Like, I want to start now. Like, there's no reason for me to take, like, a class about, like... You're paying for these dumb classes at community college that are like, hey, we're supposed to prep you for your next class or you're going to your wherever you want to transfer. And in that class, you just watch fucking movies or something. And I'm like, why am I paying like $1,000 or whatever?
And wasting like 6 months to finish the class. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember I had one class at SMC. It was like, this is like to help you to whatever place you want to go to next, like whatever college. And he kept thinking I wanted to go to like, what was it? Cal Poly or something. And I was like, no, I want to go to Cal Arts. And then like all we did was like sit around and we watched Crash. He was like, this movie's so deep. And I'm like, Crash? And I was like, what am I doing here? And that's when I left SMC and I was like, okay, I want to do film because I've always liked film, and like drawing also leads into camera framing and which, you know, is easier if you understand that you can direct with your DP, your director of photography, who runs the camera. So I feel like already having an animation background or illustration, at least, helped me communicate in film a lot faster. So once I left SMC, I went to the Art Institute, which is closed down now. they were like one of those for-profit schools. They had commercials. They like came to like
Everest College.
Pick
up the phone. You're sitting in the couch anyway.
Like, I know. I left SMC and then he was yelling at me. I was like, okay. So I called them and I was like, okay, let's do this. Cause I just want to start fast. And my cousin went to the Art Institute in Sacramento for game design. So I was like, okay, if he's doing it, I got to do that too. Then honestly, I'm not a school person. Like, I think school's dumb. I don't think you need to do school to be an artist or anything. I was awful in high school. I just didn't like doing work. It was just pointless to me. I was like, I'm not going to use any of this shit. So I went to Art Institute. Of course I got in. It's a for-profit school. I did my 4 years. I graduated. I basically, honestly, my whole time there, I was producing and editing. So at that school, they're not like a USC or like an AFI where like they make you guys all in a group, like do a project together. At the Art Institute, they made you do everything. Like, oh, here's your task. Figure it out. So I'm like, okay. So we have to like go and find a team. We have to be real scrappy. We learned half the things. We like were told by a teacher at one point, like to YouTube how to use Premiere Pro to edit.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh my God. Like, oh,
wow.
So like,
you're already paying all this money and you go to a YouTube university now.
I know, it was so stressful. And I was like, okay, they have cameras at least, I guess. But no, yeah. I mean, I only did college because my mom and everyone wanted me to, you know? So I was like, okay, I already left SMC. I don't know if I could leave this place again. And I took a big loan and all this shit out, you know? So I was editing and producing most of my time at Art Institute. And my last year is where I decided to direct and write, which I made the letter. And that was my thesis film. And yeah, it was my first time directing, writing, and I produced it and I edited the film as well. So mixing in the two talents that I was already working on there, I already knew how to produce and manage people, and I edited on the side. And to be honest, like, again, I don't think film school is for everybody. I really don't. But I think if you need the extra push, okay, fine, like, do it. Like, I can't deny that I benefited from going to film school because I made the letter, right? Like, without going to film school, I wouldn't have made that. But at the same time, like, I would fight with the dean all the time, and I'd fight with all these other people in charge because they were dumb. Like, they didn't know what they were doing, hence them closing.
The people responsible of teaching the youth, right? Yeah.
It's funny because we had pretty decent teachers. It was, like, our dean and our president and all the people in charge who would have to, like, sign stuff off for us to, like, let's say, get cameras, to rent out props, like, all that kind of stuff would be very difficult. And they'd be like, oh, we can't do it. And I'm like, yeah, you can. I was like, you know, I'd be like, I'd forge shit just so they can, like, we can get shit done. You know, I have to, like, do the wrong stuff and, like, the bad way to make it right, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah, I see.
I was so annoying. Like, they're like, we don't have insurance to, like.
We don't have insurance. What?
Schools have insurance. Yeah. Like, you guys say right here on the paper, on this square. Like, you have insurance for, like, all this stuff. And again, like, I, for the letter, I had a child, which was Sochi. And, like, with kids, you need to have a studio teacher and they need to have a permit. And you need to have a permit to hire them, even if they're not being paid. So, like, I had to, like, tell them, I'm like, we need workers' comp insurance. Or I checked it off. And they'd be like, no, we don't offer that. I'm like, it's on your paper right here. They're like, no, we don't offer that. And then I just, like, fucking forged it, copied it a few times to make it look real. And then I went to, like, the fucking, like, U.S., like, state office for labor division. And I'm like, I'm here to get my permit to hire a minor. And I'm all sweating in the room. Like, oh, my God, I hope they know. I know. I'm like, I hope they process this. And then they gave it to me that day. And they were like, here you go. And I'm like, oh, shit, it worked. So I'm like, I'm forging documents saying they have the insurance, and obviously they did, unless it it went through. Like, at one point I wanted to rent a prop gun because there's a prop gun in the letter, and they're like, we don't do that. And I'm like, I rented a prop gun last year from you guys, you idiots. Like, yeah, I would fight so much with people there, like the people in charge. Like, there's nothing I hate more than people in charge who don't know what the fuck they're doing. It's like, why are you here?
Damn. No, I mean, it's crazy because, again, these are all just experiences that you had to go through to ultimately lead to that moment where you made the letter. And then I feel like, at least from my observation, it looks like that's what kind of started skyrocketing you up, you know. And I think that's awesome because you don't know what you're building up to until it kind of hits you and you're like, holy shit, I'm making it, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the times I'm assuming you went through it when you were going through that, you were, I'm sure you had doubts at some point, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, yeah. Especially, it's funny because when you're in it, like, you're just like, I have a goal, I have a thing to do. Mm-hmm. Then when you finish the movie and you get, like, everything in post, every director feels this. Like, I know for a fact. Like, you see all your dailies, like, all of your shots, and you lay them up on a timeline, like, in Premiere Pro. And you're just like, oh, my God, what did I do? Like, you know, you're like, is this movie even, like good? You know, like, you question yourself. Yeah. And it's having that faith. Like, I did all this prep work, and I had a vision for a reason, right? So, like, we can do this. Like, it's set up for your vision. So, like, let's go in there, and it's going to be fine. So when you see all these clips, right, like, these long takes or whatever, and you're seeing it's just one line and then another one of just one line, it's hard to like imagine it there and there. And even when you get your first cut, you're gonna be like, oh God, like, this is awful, you know. Yeah. There's even like that Masterclass commercial with Scorsese where he's like, yeah, I think like everyone's rough cut, you get physically ill. It's like, yeah, that's true. Like, if you don't, yeah, there is a problem. Like, you should know, like, this isn't my vision yet, but we will get there, you know?
So just to, rough cut would mean what, like the first version of everything put together?
Yeah, it's not a full version. It's basically like we have all the clips to make the movie, you know? And it's kind of like maybe paced out pretty decently. It won't have like the music in. It won't have like the color grade, the effects, all the sound design. So it's very rough. That's why they call it that, because it's like, oh, like, we're just getting the bones of it, essentially. It's almost like a step above an assembly, which is just the clips laid out. Yeah, so rough cuts are pretty tough. And then those rough cuts just go through different versions, like second rough, third rough, fine cut, and then the final cut, you know? But yeah, the first ones are always really, really stressful. But it's normal. It's normal. Yeah. You know, I think people should expect it. I think people get scared and then they don't want to finish something and then they just.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that's pretty common in a lot of people, I would think. You know, like, you start something, you feel like you're not going to do it. And a lot of people sometimes just give up. And, you know, it's every now and then somebody's like, nope, I'm going to keep, I got to keep going, you know?
Yeah.
But I think that's a natural way to feel when you're working towards something, you know, you know, because otherwise you're just going to be comfortable and you're not really challenging yourself or trying to, you know, surpass your own expectations of yourself. But no, it sounds like you've definitely been through a lot in the last just a handful of years, you know, and I that's awesome. It's awesome to hear these type of stories and, you know, like I've mentioned to most of my guests, whenever I come out of a podcast, I feel motivated to just like keep going too, you know, because even for something as simple as this, you know, you worry about it afterwards. Like, did the conversation work? Was it good? Should I release it? But it's more like, you know, you just got to keep going with it, you know, chip away at it.
And it's good because it also shows like you care. Like if you have that kind of standard for yourself, like it's good to like care. And like, I think too, like it feels like not cool to like care too much. So some people are like, like, should I, like, whatever, it's not a big deal, you know, but just do it, you know, if it's important to you, then like go the extra mile, ask more questions, do all these things, or like, you know, I think it's really important for people to just continue on. Cause like I've had circumstances where like the letter was for a class, so I have to get it done. Like, Spotlight, they put me with tight regulations, so I have to get it done. So I understand where like there's some people who don't have like that time crunch on them where it's like this is harder to self-motivate. I get that. Like self-motivation when you don't have people who are like on your ass like is difficult, and especially when you're like very independent, just starting out, like, and you don't know maybe a lot of people, like it's just you. So like, I mean, even me, like, I recently quit my day job. Like, it's hard to, like, force yourself to write, force yourself to work and get up every day and create your own schedule, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's really hard to maintain that structure.
Yeah, because, like, unless someone's, like, waiting for you to clock in, you know, and, like, all that, that's, like, it's hard, but it's also like they're setting your day. Like when you wake up and you have to make that choice, like that is very difficult. And I think not enough credit is given to freelancers. Mm-hmm. Like that type of drive, that type of self, like assertiveness is like really not easy at all.
Yeah, I know. It's hard. I mean, I've done my share of freelance work, but at the same time, it's like, hey, you need to finish this design by next Wednesday. And it's like, I'm chilling till like Tuesday.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, fuck. But no, it takes work. I think anything that, like you mentioned, that you care about, it's going to take work. It's going to take those long nights. It's going to take those sad days, those good days, you know, all the good stuff. But ultimately, that makes you that, gives you that full-rounded experience, mm-hmm. You know, before we wrap this up, what is the best way for them to get more information about how to get started in film? Or what advice do you have for anybody?
I don't want to sound like an old person, because I feel like old people are always like, there's a phone in your hand, there's a camera in your hand. And that is kind of annoying, like, because like I was told that even in film school. Mm-hmm. But I think if anything, just play around. Like, just if you have an idea, like, I think most of it for most people starts with the writing, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you want to be a director, just write it. Like, write it. It's going to be bad when you first write it. Don't get too stuck on each thing and like, I need to get it perfect as I write it. It's like, no, put a temp word or put an asterisk, like, okay, they're going to say something along these lines, and then move on. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you have to like, and this is something we all learn every day. Like I learn every day. You have to like, just remember, like you can come back to it. So just keep going, like finish whatever short film, feature, music video, like your first step in it. In the writing process, and then just go back and edit it, you know, go back and do your second draft, your third draft. That's the hard part. And like, just write it. As you do that, you'll get better. Find a friend. They don't have to be in film, any friend like that you trust. Like, I think you have good taste, or I think you're gonna know how to like break something down. Like I trust your like opinion to give you feedback. 'Cause I think that's another thing that's really important. Like, okay, finding someone that you can like give stuff to have a second eye.
Mm-hmm.
That's really important. It's not always necessary, 'cause I know not everybody has that, but like going through actually writing it, getting feedback, and then just making it, like, it's going to be tough again, making shit, like, especially when you're on your own, 'cause I'm assuming most people are like, but once you do it, even if you make it and you're not like 100% satisfied, that's okay. Do it mm-hmm. again. Like, keep learning, keep doing it again and again and again. And it doesn't have to be such high stakes. And just remembering, like, in the end of the day, you have to fuck up to learn. You really do.
Of course.
And yeah. I fucked up really bad before. And like, it's just one of those things where like, even other people just forget about it, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, people only notice your wins. So if you just keep trying and trying, like, it'll eventually lead into like, okay, now I know how to apply this, or now I know people that can help you here, or avoid this, or try something differently. And it's just natural. And I don't think you need schooling for that. You just need that like drive and willpower, which is also hard.
It's just also hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for sure, I think that you can have under control a little better if you know how to manage it. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, I mean, is there anything that people should look forward to in terms of content that you're going to be releasing soon or that you're working on?
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing the festival circuit right now for Kid Ugly. Where am I playing? I'm playing in Philadelphia next month, and then Malibu the next month after that. But you can follow me at This Jazz Cat, and I do updates. So
there you go.
That would be the best way to do it. And I'm also pitching a feature script that's a coming of age film about like me growing up in Southgate, and my mom, she forced me to do my first communion and confirmation when I was like 17, so I was around like 7-year-olds. Uh-huh. So it was really silly. Her to like prove to my aunts and uncles, like, oh,
está bautizada.
Yeah. Like, oh, like,
well, bautizada, or whatever that thing's called, you know.
Yeah. Like, just basically like she's prove legit. Like, oh, like, she's not Americanized, like, you know, like, yeah. Because my mom was like the baby, so like they pick on her for her bad Spanish, and she's like, nah, guys, we're pretty. Look at her, she's baptized and she has first communion confirmation. So it's just funny, coming of age film about a mother and a daughter coming of age. So I've been dying to see more movies that follow mother-daughter stories, but mothers who are like younger, like my mom had me when she was 17. So like, I feel like our dynamic's a little different from what I see on TV. Like people always have like the nagging old mom with the short hair. Like my mom felt like a sister. It felt more like Lilo and Stitch. So like, I want to show that. So that's what that movie is. It's called Hija de tu Madre.
Nice.
So pitching around this year, and we got second round at the Sundance development track last year, which is pretty big, but yeah. And then I have a horror feature film, which I'm hoping to get the ball rolling on soon and have the mental power to write. Because I've been dying to get into genre. Kid Ugly was my little first step into it. So The Letter is coming of age, and Iha basically is like its predecessor to that, or like, is that the right word for that? I don't think it is. It's the next one to that. And then Kid Ugly's next like thing is a series. So I'm trying to pitch Kid Ugly as a series. And it basically follows, I think I mentioned it, but yeah, like them as like in a bounty hunt across America. So yeah, I have horror, series, Western, and coming of age feature. And the short for Kid Ugly, it's going to be around the whole year. It's going to be playing random places.
Hey, that's awesome. It sounds busy. It sounds like you have a lot on your plate. And I, you know, I'm wishing the team but the best.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, I don't even think I even said your name in the whole podcast the whole time. Today, my guest was Jasmine Aguilar. Oh my God, I totally forgot to even who it was. Oh my God, people are like, who the fuck is this?
I know, we never said.
Thank you again for coming out, and have a nice day. That's a call back to Chopping Mom. Check it out, people. 1980s. Good night.